Oh, I thought it was just all about doing great work. Okay. But then you realized, you know, a series of projects doesn't make a business.
Hey, it's Joel, and you're listening to episode 40 of the RevThinking podcast, the conversation between creative entrepreneurs who know the best way to deal with the future is to create it. On today's episode, I'm speaking with director Jordan Brady. Our topic is filmmakers need to be creative entrepreneurs.
Welcome to RevThinking. RevThink leverages years of experience and practical wisdom to help owners of top creative studios, so you don't have to choose between following your passion and running your business. Now here is your host, Joel Pilger.
Hey, it's Joel, and today is Wednesday, April the 4th. I'm excited to say this is episode number 40 of the RevThinking podcast. Very cool to be coming at you for the 40th time. Hard to believe we're at that number. I'm looking forward to hitting 50 and 100 and more down the road, but one step at a time. Before I get into our conversation with Jordan Brady, which you're going to love, by the way, just a couple announcements. One, wanted to let you know that RevThink has an event coming up in May in Los Angeles that is Show Launcher. It's in partnership with NatP, and it is a quarterly workshop series. This first one is session one of Show Launcher. And basically the idea behind Show Launcher is don't sell TV, develop TV that sells, which means these are quarterly masterclasses teaching you how to successfully sell your idea to audiences that are ready to buy it. There's a lot of confusion about how you go about developing content and creating programming for television. And Show Launcher is what I would call a reverse engineering approach that we learned from Patrick Jager. And this workshop is going to be the first in a series of sessions. The first one is about understanding the marketplace. Then later in the year, we'll do session two, perfecting the pitch. And then session three, the meeting and the deal. So if you want to find out more, go to revthink.com and click on engage, and you'll see an entry there giving you more information about Show Launcher. So take a look at that, and we look forward to seeing you in Los Angeles. That's actually the only announcement. Let me get into today's episode. So for those of you that don't know Jordan Brady, he is a filmmaker and partner at Super Lounge. That's a production company in Los Angeles. But, you know, Jordan is also what I would say, he's not only a director and a filmmaker, but he's also a really generous teacher and podcaster. And he's also just an all-around funny guy. I can't remember if he's done stand-up in the past or if he's currently doing stand-up, but holy cow, the guy is so witty. Well, Jordan and I sat down to do a podcast a little over a year ago that was really well received, and a lot of people talked about it and got a lot out of it. So Jordan and I decided to sit down again this year and have a conversation. And Jordan was kind enough to have me on his podcast, as well as kind enough to say, sure, RevThink should rebroadcast the episode on our podcast. So that's what today's episode is. It's a conversation between me and Jordan, really talking about this idea of filmmakers need to be creative entrepreneurs. Now, a couple other bits and bytes about Jordan, just so you know. Jordan does run a thing called the Commercial Directing Bootcamp. So these are one-day intensive seminars that he does on filmmaking, specifically around commercial production. So those of you that want to learn how to direct commercials, Jordan basically pitches himself as, hey, learn from my 20 years of experience directing over 1,000 spots. Now, I checked, and his next boot camp on April 21st in Los Angeles is sold out. So it's a pretty popular event. But go to jordanbrady.com and you can find out when the next one is. I've heard great things about his boot camp. Also, Jordan recently wrote a book called Commercial Directing Voodoo, and that's available on Amazon. So I recommend you take a peek at that. It looks pretty fun. And of course, his Respect the Process podcast is one of the best podcasts on the web about directing and commercial production and the like. So if you haven't heard that, please go to his podcast and check out Respect the Process with Jordan Brady. Okay, that's enough of me giving you the intro. Here is my conversation with Jordan Brady on filmmakers need to be creative entrepreneurs.
You know, I always love it when a guest that was very popular with the listeners returns to the show. And today is no exception. Joel Pilger.
Hello.
Is on the show from RevThink. And Joe, you got some exciting stuff happening. I joined the Facebook group.
Okay, cool.
It's a private group. I don't know if we should talk about it.
No, you can mention it. It's just not for everyone.
Well, that makes it more special.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're with your tribe.
The seven ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
The seven ingredients for a successful, what's the proper name of the group?
Well, the group's called...
Wait, do you not want to talk about the group?
No, the group's good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, the group's good. So the seven ingredients is a private... It's called the seven ingredients, which is short for the seven ingredients of a creative firm. That's just a concept that at RevThink, we know that there's these seven areas that it takes to run a successful studio, production company, what have you, right? And that's almost like serves the foundation of what we teach, what we're trying to help, how we're trying to help the industry, how we engage with our clients. And we said, man, wouldn't it be cool to create a Facebook group around the seven ingredients and invite owners of studios, production companies, agencies, what have you, to come in and all hang out and share like, what's going on? How do we do this? This is crazy. It's, you know how it is. It's a really complex type of business to run, especially if you're a creative person. Right, the creative entrepreneur is very different than your average business.
Well, that's
person.
That's the whole model behind RevThink is
yes.
that you consult and advise companies that are started by creative people that may not have the business acumen. I mean, you're right; it's a totally different skill set.
Yeah,
and one would think. I mean, there are people that are great at both. God bless them. But one would think if you excel at your creative endeavor that got you to where you want to start your own shop, that you most likely would be lacking in some of the skills it takes to run a company.
In a way, I actually hope you are.
Well, yeah, it's your business.
Well, because like the creative who goes out on his own, it usually achieves a certain amount of success quickly because he's so great at what he does.
Or she. We don't discriminate.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course.
Are there any women in
the
group? Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
good.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a plenty. And I'll tell you more about the members in my accelerator. A lot of ladies in the group.
A lot of ladies in the group.
Yeah. But the creative entrepreneur, the guy that goes, girl that goes out on her own, usually achieves early success.
Right.
Because it's all about the work. Okay. But then as they start to grow, it suddenly becomes about things like finance, marketing, sales, right? Sales is this whole, deep dive that we could spend days talking about. But as that person begins to grow, they start to realize, oh, I thought it was just all about doing great work, okay? But then you realize, a series of projects doesn't make a business. So there's this shift that has to happen, right? Of, okay, wow, once I get to $500,000 or $1 million, sounds like a lot of money. But when you're running a business, it's not. It doesn't really give you what you need to build a team.
You know where you'll run that business? Right into the ground.
Yeah. Well, it's hard.
It's almost like...
It's really hard.
You can come out the gate with your new shop and go, you spike up. And at best, you would plateau, right? If you just maintained. I mean, that's the problem I have is I have, 90% repeat business. So even if they all call with every project... At best, you're barely growing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding those new customers or clients that seems to be the tough part.
Well, it is, especially because I think creatives have a really hard time selling themselves. And this is where I actually see a common pattern where as a firm, a business grows, there's a day when you have to separate creative from sales. That guy's the creative. That girl's the sale. And once you make that shift, you suddenly have the, oh, I don't have to go into this meeting and toot my own horn. Instead, you've got her saying, oh, you're going to love working with Jordan. He's so brilliant. This is going to be so great. And that's something you could never say about yourself. And you just get to sit there and blush while she just waxes poetically about how amazing you are. And everyone in the room is nodding going, yeah, we can't wait to work with him.
I agree with everything you're saying. Except I wouldn't use Jordan Brady as an example because we're listening to my show. No, I know. Posted at jordanbrady.com. I'm like Barnum and Bailey combined.
Well, but this is actually a common attribute I find in creative entrepreneurs as well, that there is a humility.
I'm joking. I have two EPs now at Super Lounge, and they head up sales. We work more in silos. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't tell them how to sell.
Right.
They don't tell me to do a two shot.
Right.
And we, that's an understanding. It makes it more efficient.
Well, it also plays to your strengths.
Yeah.
Right. It plays to your strengths, and it's actually cool. You should be humble because you're a creative and you know that there is great talent out there. The world is full of amazing talent and you have a part to play in it, but it's really awkward when the creative stands up and isn't humble, right? And tries to sell himself. It's really kind of weird.
I think those days are gone.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they were ever that popular.
Well, you know, right? Maybe back in what I call the glory days, right? In the 90s when every Super Bowl spot was 2 to 3 million, big visual effects. There were some directors that, you know, just sort of, I think, threw their weight around.
Right.
But yeah, those days are gone.
And so the Facebook group, what I've liked is, one, I met Justin Andrews from Animus.
Uh-huh, and he was on the show?
He was on the show. He hasn't been on yet.
Okay.
We had a nice chat.
Cool.
So we're time jumping here. We stockpile interviews and whatnot.
No, Justin's great guy. Super, super smart.
Really smart guy. And we talked about the same sort of thing, like, how do I focus on this? And he said that you and Rev Think have really helped.
Oh, nice.
A lot. So that's cool to see. And it's also cool, just like with anything, to see your tribe of people post questions. Like, I was thinking that, but I didn't know who to ask.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, if you're an owner, you sort of have this, you're generally on this path called, I'm just figuring it out as I go. There's really not a roadmap for how to run a production company or, you know, a studio. And there's this also assumption of, well, I'm not going to go talk to my competitor. That would be weird. Okay. But surprisingly, what you find in like 7 Ingredients, we also find this, we have another group that we lead called Creative Entrepreneurs. It's within Promax BDA. And in this,
what is Promax BDA? I won Promax award.
Yes, I know. I saw that on
your
credentials
of them,
or something,
right? For Shark Fest.
And you're like, what the hell is that?
No, I mean, I know. I thought it was like a promo award.
It is sort of. So Promax BDA is Promax, which is the promotions side. BDA is the Broadcast Design Association. They merged several eons ago, but it's the Entertainment Marketing Association, which is where all the TV networks and entertainment companies get together and talk about how to market and promote their content. So within Promax BDA, you have, all the clients called TV networks and the OTT guys like the Netflixes and the Amazons. It's a wonderful world. But then you have all these agencies, okay, or the less fancy term, vendor.
Right.
Okay, but it's a great place to connect and communicate with potential clients. And it's very much about networking. Every year, the annual conference, lots and lots of networking. But I was an agency in that community, have been for a dozen years or more. But about 2 years ago, I approached the president, Steve Gazanjian, friend of mine, who used to run Belief. Did you remember Belief?
That, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Killer shop. So Steve's an old agency guy. So I approached him. I said, Steve, come on. Agencies in this association are underserved, to put it mildly. And Steve totally got it. He was like, yeah, I know. I'm committed to changing that. And I was like, let's do it. Let's create some sort of a community for the agency owners within Promax. And he was like, do it. Let's make it happen. So we created this group called Creative Entrepreneurs, which is really a subset. It's every quarter and at the annual conference, we get all the agency owners together in a room. And we're going through the 7 ingredients. So we started on sales. Everybody loves sales.
Right. Are you now launching into the ingredients?
Sure.
Number one is sales?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then our next one, we talked about marketing, which was all about positioning and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
And now we're, you know, I'm back in LA, and me and my partner, Tim Thompson, we're here leading another event at Terranea. And our topic today is finance, specifically bulletproofing profits.
Ooh.
And it's funny because...
Is that number three? Is that the third ingredient?
It's... Well...
Run down the seven.
Okay. So the seven, they go... They're not in any particular order, Well, that's not quite true. They sort of are. But the ingredients are marketing, sales, production, finance, operations, entrepreneurship, and then the work, creative.
Which is the result of the previous six?
Well, in a way.
Or sort of?
Yeah. And it's interesting how they sort of, they do sort of follow an order. Like everyone starts with creative. They start with the work. Uh-huh. They think, hey, I'm really great at this.
Just put the work up and everyone will see it and it'll go viral and they'll call and we'll make more.
Every creative entrepreneur I've ever known said, you know what? I was really freaking good at fill in the blank, motion design.
Yeah.
So I decided to go out on my own as if that's all it takes. Right? And you're laughing. You're like, yeah.
That's. Well, I mean, it's just the it depends on your algorithm, right? That you even see people's work.
Yeah. So, and then these seven ingredients come into play and they do tend to unfold over time. You then realize, wait, I need to market myself. I need to get the word out there. And then you realize, wait, I need to sell. I need to be able to negotiate and command a premium and all this.
What's the difference? Sorry to interrupt. What's the difference between sales and marketing?
Oh, I love that question. They're the same thing, right?
I don't know. I mean, I'm somewhat rhetorical, but I thought it would be interesting to the listener right now going, sales and marketing, it's the same thing.
Kind of the same thing. Well, yeah. Tim and I are convinced that they're different because they're actually two different words.
Tim is your partner in RevThink.
That's correct. But no, here's what I like to say. Marketing is all those things that you do to enable sales to happen, to do its job. So think of it this way. If you didn't get the word out there, if you didn't have a clear positioning about who you are as a director, what Super Lounge does in the world, the salesperson wouldn't be able to do their job. Mm-hmm. They would call and say, hey, you know, I'm Susie and I represent unknown name and unheard of thing and unclarified position. Like the salesperson would just be like, I got nothing. I need a website. I need a reel. I need a roster of directors. I need like, give me what I need. That's marketing. And marketing is what we do at scale. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Meaning we, when you're doing marketing, you're talking about, I want to communicate with 1,000 people, showing them, here's who we are. This is what we've been doing. This is our mission. Isn't that amazing? And sales starts to happen. I call the transition from marketing to sales when someone says, you know, I have a need. I want to talk to you.
Sales is more a specific project or assignment that you're going after that you want to close and get that job awarded.
Yep. And I think once you start to realize that marketing and sales are actually very different. They support one another and feed off of one another. But once you start to understand the difference between the two, it gives you a lot of power because you start to understand, oh yeah, it's not just this catch-all of, oh, let's go get work. There's a sales cycle. There's a process. There's a way that we introduce ourselves. We start conversations. We nurture those relationships. We do the project. But then even the way we do repeat business and forge deeper relationships and solve deeper problems to get better projects, bigger budgets. I mean, this is all part of the process.
So if I take a step back, and I'm a creative person, I'm listening right now to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. I don't know where people listen.
Right.
But they're listening and they're going, well, I'm a creative and my buddies and I have this shop and we, you know, we got some good clients and we want to grow. But do I have to learn this? And here's my question. Do I have to learn this or do I just learn enough to hire someone
who's going to handle it? No, great question. Well, I think most creative entrepreneurs do the latter approach. There's this assumption, especially in sales, right? A couple of guys running a small shop in your example, and they say, you know, we just need a salesperson. We need one of them, their EPs. If we could just find us a killer EP or a killer rep, that's the other good one, right? Yeah. We just need a rep. What I find is you really can't delegate that which you haven't mastered yourself because you have to understand it. You can't just say, go get us projects, salesperson, go. Because there's this whole understanding of, well, what is it we're doing? How are we going to do it? What's our
approach?
There's
a holistic approach that the company needs to have to be able to give reps marching orders to say, this is the kind of work. I just had a conversation yesterday with a rep saying, you know, what I really want to do is direct. No, what I really want to do is more experiential stunts because I've done a handful where I've, you know, like consulted on how to do, and we film it. I mean, it ends up being content, But it was a real rush because there's hidden cameras, there's celebrities, or, you know, people are doing big stunts all the time at Times Square, wherever they do them.
Yeah.
And I don't think without having the conversation, she would have realized, like, that I was interested in doing that. So, the fish stinks from the head down. You have to say, this is what I want to do. This is how I think we should go about getting that work. You probably know who the agency is that does this kind of stuff. Let's work together. Well, but my point being, Joel, is that I don't know how to go and get that work. I don't know who to contact. I just have this idea. So I haven't mastered it.
Right.
But I'd like to think I know enough about what I want to do and what I'm good at.
But I bet you've mastered it more than you maybe realize.
Mastered's a real... Maybe that's your syntax. Yeah, maybe I'm hung up on the syntax of the word master.
I bet you're a pretty darn good salesman in the right context, in the right setting.
Yeah.
Like, I think you understand how to have that conversation.
But to your point at the top of the conversation, I have failed when I've tried to sell myself. Or even as a creative, I failed trying to sell the other directors. Because people look at me with a different lens. Like, why is he pitching these other people?
These other guys.
And I want to go, because they make me money.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that obvious?
Right.
Like,
don't you get the equation here?
I can stay home.
No, but here's what I like what you just said. You said, I failed.
Truly.
What that tells me is you learned. Like, we only learn when we fail, really.
I think it was Alfred in the first Christopher Nolan Batman movie.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, he said, why do we fall down, sir? Which is not a bad Alfred.
That's pretty good, yeah. Michael Caine /Alfred. Caine. That's pretty good.
Why do we fall down, sir?
But what it tells me is you've put yourself out there, you failed, and you learned. And guess what? You said, I suck at this.
To pick ourselves back up.
Pick ourselves back up. Yeah, you and you delegated that. You said, I'm going to let somebody who's really good at this, but the failure taught you something. It taught you what it means to be great at sales. So this is where I think the really great entrepreneurs, like if you talk to a guy that runs a studio that's maybe 8 million or 20 million, those guys have been through all seven of those ingredients. They have a really good grasp on all of those. So when you go to them and say, hey, we need to beef up our marketing, they know what you mean by marketing, and they know how to define the role, the need, create the solution. And then you go all the way around the wheel to operations and what a financial system needs to look like. And they're like, yep, they may not, like, I suck at finances, right? Like, that's never my bag. But I mastered it enough that I realized I really need somebody great at this. And the failure was really what helped me get through to the point of, I need to hire someone called a CFO.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is kind of the process as you attempt to master those ingredients and you realize, right. So this is not my genius, I'm going to delegate.
You were telling me, we were talking before we started rolling, that you have something coming up.
Right.
And I think we should get to that quickly so people can sign up.
Sure.
Space is limited.
Yes. So we are, Tim and I are in town for another Creative Entrepreneurs event at Terranea. So this is the resort here on the coast.
Oh, just, it's fabulous.
It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's like a little Eden.
It's a little oasis. But yeah, we're going to have a group of, 40 or 50 creative entrepreneurs talking about the area of finance, principally, among other things, and we're going to talk about bulletproofing profits.
Ooh.
I know. And it's funny because I can already hear a lot of creatives out there listening, and they're like, it's not about the money.
And I'm about, like, how much? My daddy used to tell me
that's
that.
Funny. Yeah. It's not about the money, it's about how much. No, it's, I get that. Like, it for most creatives, it's not about the money. But I will say that we like to say it is about control, though. Do you want to have control over your business? Do you want to have control over how you manage your work, your resources, ultimately, if you're profitable, it empowers you to make great work. So think of it that way.
To turn down shit work.
And, yep. Yep.
And to do, yeah. You know, specifically directors that we look at or come to us or I've talked to about signing with a company or my company, anybody's, someone will say, I heard he always went over budget. Not always. I don't want to speak in absolutes. But there are a few people who I was like, oh, that's disappointing. Because you can't sustain a company if you're always going over budget. And these days, the markup on a job, which is, it could be 15%, could be 28%. Some mm-hmm. companies, we don't, I don't know if we get 28%, but that's not enough to grow on.
Yeah.
Especially, you're talking about a percentage of a smaller budget. And I know that you have talked about, it's not just the markup, there's the sales and marketing costs, especially marketing costs, have to be absorbed in your operations.
Oh yeah,
I don't know what you call that. I can see it.
The splits.
The splits. That's right.
Yeah, we could probably spend a whole show someday talking about the splits. But the reality is, to run there are costs that involved in running a business, and then there are costs associated to getting a project done. Okay, both are there.
One's the 20,000 mile high view, and the other is specific to that project.
To that project, yeah. And the reality is that, like I said earlier, a series of projects doesn't make a business, okay? The costs of just running the business are, you know, in our experience, most firms take about half the money from the project and pay for the business, meaning the owner's salaries, you know, the rent, the overheads, but also profit. Like, we bake in profit. We bake in, you know, investments and savings and taxes and all these things that most people don't think about, okay? And it's really just a shift when you realize, even like a 15% markup, there's no way, I can tell you from reality, there's no way, and I don't know if, hopefully I'm not exposing some dirty little secret to all the, you know, advertising agencies and whatever out there, but there's no company out there that would ever survive off of a 15% markup. Those companies have to make money in other places. The director line item, you know, every line,
you're buying the job at 15% markup.
Yeah.
That's just to cover the split that you're talking about.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So I digress. Let's go back to the event coming up.
Okay, sure.
That people can sign up for.
Uh-huh. So that's if you go to promaxbda.org, you'll see on the homepage there's Creative Entrepreneurs, which is the group. You can click on that. And we're doing a series of events. So there's not only the one here at Terranea. We're also doing one in February in New York, and then March in Rome at the...
Rome?
Yeah, going to Rome.
Rome, Georgia?
No, that would be close to where I grew up. But no, we're going to go to Italy for Promax BDA Europe, and then we'll be back in New York for the National Conference in June. So we've got a whole slate of
good
stuff.
The one coming up is just south of LA.
Yes. Yeah, just other side of LAX.
And how many people can attend?
I think we have space for maybe 50 or 60.
That's a fun group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's an all-day thing?
Yeah, it's an all-day thing. Yep. We really get into it because it's refreshingly, I think, for owners there, the feedback that we got when we did the same event last year at Terranea was people came up to us afterwards. We do this happy hour, social networking, whatever.
That's always fun.
Thing,
the
right?
Mixer.
The mixer, yeah. And we're sitting out there on the Pacific, you know, sipping wine and hanging out, and everyone's going, I had no idea there was this community, because I've always sort of looked at my peers as like, oh, there's the owner of that shop. Oh, and there's the owner that runs that studio. Oh, that's a little awkward. And then you get people in the room and you're like, guys, we're all dealing with the same thing. How do we find talent? How do we get jobs? How do we pay our bills? How do we move forward? And everyone's like, yeah, I'll talk about that. And our goal is, let's just make the whole damn industry stronger, because I think we can.
Yeah.
Right. Let's get together and talk best practices. Like, now, are we going to pitch for free? Right? That's always the question that comes up. Things like that. What about payment terms? Are you guys dealing with net 60, net 90? And we're like, yeah, what are you doing about it? Well, let's talk about it. We're all going to make each other better and stronger if we share that.
And now it's not free.
Nope. No, I think it's $550, $600.
Dropping the bucket compared to what you're going to learn and what you're going to get back.
That's if you're a member of Promax BDA. So you do have to join.
And that's $10,000. Is it? No. I just guessed.
No, I actually don't know what membership costs. But for anyone that wants to be playing in that space of entertainment marketing, want to work for TV networks, I'm just telling you, don't walk, just go join Promax, go to the national conference, and you'll be like, holy cow, why haven't I been playing here for all my life?
I see a lot of graphic design and animation in that world as well.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Because you might do that with clips of a show.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right? So specifically, listeners, if you're in that world, join.
Yes.
I've always been like a third-party vendor. meaning I worked for like Nat Geo, Wild. We did the Shark Fest this year. We did it 2 years ago.
Yep.
And they had an internal creative agency.
Mm-hmm.
So they just hired us as production partners
right.
to do it. So I flirted with the whole idea, but I think that in specializing, my clients are ad agencies.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't know that I'm going to run and join because I don't know that I have the goods to win right now there.
Well, there's the question of the goods. I think it's also just what's your wheelhouse? Right. What's your passion, right?
The goods, the wheelhouse, what gets me
right.
what gets me off. Yeah, that I love it, but I don't mind being hired once the assignment is sold
yeah.
by someone else.
Yeah, I
and a question about that. Just are there a lot of ad agencies?
Oh, in that space?
Yeah.
No, there are a few, but it's interesting how typically ad agencies don't fare well in that world because advertising is completely different than promotion.
Of course.
But see, you know that.
Well, I started in doing promos.
Okay, sure.
Like umpteen years ago, I had a company and we did promos for Comedy Central and MTV, and I would pitch the network, and then you work directly yeah. with them.
Well, here's what
or
I find.
With their creative department, who are some really talented people.
Well, this is what's often so surprising to creatives, is if you do promo work and you walk into an ad agency and go, look how great our work is, they will look at you like you're an alien. They're like, I don't know what this is. You're confusing me. And in fact, get the hell out. And likewise, if you do all advertising work and you go talk to a TV network and you go, look how beautiful and amazing our spot work is, they're like, I don't know what to do with that.
I had a friend, we did stand-up comedy together in the 80s, and he was a copywriter, has gone on to be a wonderful creative director, Daniel Catfish Russ, if you're listening. He's not listening, but we parted ways. We reconnected once I was directing and producing these promos. And I'm talking original campaigns I would sell and go off and shoot. And I said, I'm ready to make commercials, and you're a big creative director. And I sent him my stuff on like a VHS tape, you know? And he goes, Jordan, these are not even close. I go, it's 30 seconds. I have Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo doing a promo for their show. Right. And it's an original thing, and there they are.
He just chuckled.
And he goes,
how quaint.
He goes, let me just tell you. And he broke it down for me why it's different. And the messaging's different. Just everything about it.
Yeah. The problem you're actually solving is quite different.
Right.
Right? Because a promo navigates, it points. And it's almost like a story about a story. Okay, that's what really good promotion does. And it helps you navigate to find that content. Whereas advertising is different beast. It's almost like it can be this aspirational thing of, hey, if you buy this, your life will be better.
Right.
I mean, you're just solving a different problem. And so firms tend to specialize like, oh, we're really great at the marketing and promotions thing, or we're great at the advertising thing. And there are a few that do both, more than a few. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, if you haven't played in one world and you want to move into that world, it's not a small undertaking.
Okay, new topic. I am a filmmaker, and I'm in outside of Portland, okay?
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm thinking of this one company in particular who they do amazing work. And their drone shots like flying low through the forest and above the cliffs and everything. And this is a fictitious thing, but I'm inspired by some people I'm thinking of. And I'm like, it's me and my buddy, and we know these guys. We did this one video for their website, and then we got a slew of them. Now what? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't want to go to Promax because, yeah, not really in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some cool companies around here. Love to get some of that Nike work. Marketing. Whew, well, I heard you on the podcast. But what do I do about... what do I do about sales? What do I do to get this work out there? Like, I know I gotta brand the company, but specifically, how do I get that?
Mm.
And then my buddy said, hire a rep. We got to hire a rep. But
yeah.
Joel said it's not as easy as
that. This is an 8-part series we're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
But I think that's a really relevant
yeah,
scenario
sure.
to people listening right now that are making killer stuff. Like, we've always said that, like... Since you were on the show last, the tools have even gotten better.
Oh, yeah.
And cheaper.
Yeah, the drones are awesome. I see the drone stuff out there, and I'm like, I can picture the shop from Portland.
I used to hate the drones.
Sure.
And now I love them.
Yeah.
It's a tool.
Well, let's see. What would I say? Well, it's funny. I had a really similar conversation with a small shop in Northern California yesterday. It was a guy that was interested in my accelerator, Jumpstart, and whether or not this was the thing that he needed to kind of help him reach the next level. And I mean, again, I could spend 8 hours talking about this. This is like almost, it's what I spend most of my time talking about.
You're very passionate about helping people. That's what I love.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is what I do. This is my mission, right? This is, I was there for 20 years running my own shop. And now I'm like, okay, now how do I just take all this and invest it in the next generation? I want to teach everybody how to do what I did. But I also have this perspective I love of, I think in the past year, I realized I've worked with 70 different studios around the world from 18 countries.
Wow.
So there's just a lot of perspective. I'm like, hey, I'm here to help. If I was going to try and net it out and say to your friend outside of Portland, I would say, first of all, realize that early success that you have is based on, oh, we're great at the work. Okay. If you do want to reach the next level, and that's an important question to ask, do you really want to grow? Do you really want to run a business? Mm. Okay. Because in order to do bigger projects, better clients, you know, the better budgets, you have to be running a business. You can't just be like, hey, I'm really good at this. What do you got? Okay. Nike doesn't hand projects to some dude because he's talented. So I'm bursting bubbles here. Okay. But
this is good.
Yeah. So what I would say is if you really want to do that, awesome. I applaud you. Okay. This is the journey of the creative entrepreneur that I am, you know, here to serve. Once you make that decision, you start to realize, okay, in order for me to tackle this and reach this next level, I have to actually kind of unlearn. There's some myths actually that I've maybe believed, like, oh, it's all about the work, you know, oh, it's all about great client service. Oh, you know, we stand out. We stand out great because our work is so wonderful. Well, I'm telling you, there's a lot you have to unlearn.
We were Vimeo Pick of the Week.
Oh, there you go. See? And that's why you're now a $100 million production company. Right?
No. You're being facetious. Yeah, you're not. You got to get it out there.
Yeah, there's a lot more involved. So there's some unlearning and embracing new habits. And these new habits, these new concepts are, again, it's this journey of the creative entrepreneur I'm talking about. I would say the first steps are you've got to be great at marketing and most specifically positioning. Meaning you have to find out what is really true and authentic, but not only that, sticky,
what does that
spicy.
Mean?
Like, what is the thing that you're going to, how can you carve out a spot in the minds of your potential clients? Because I'm telling you, if you go out there and you say, we're a production company who does blah, 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 storytelling, blah, 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 collaboration, blah, 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 whatever, it's just not going to stick. It's not going to stick. You've only got that first chance to make the first impression. So you gotta be you. So getting clear about that. And then once you have that, you have a strategy called, okay, great. Now we start to get the word out. We start doing promotion. We start doing the email blasts. We start putting real and concerted effort into marketing and putting those routines in place. And then we have to master the sales game. Because what happens when somebody says, yeah, let's meet. Let's talk. Where do you begin? How do you even start that conversation? And most importantly, how do you nurture that conversation in a way that leads to a project? Okay. But there's more. There's more. Because the firms that break out of what I call this painful season, where, you know, certain size and they're small, are the ones that start to understand that sales is not a service game. It's actually leadership. It's expertise. Mm. Okay. So where you're selling value, not selling services. So we could spend a couple hours talking about this.
No, it's
a big idea.
It's clear. And I want to say Doug Sharon is a rep right here on the West Coast for commercials, production companies. I think he has an animation house. He's been on the show. He's also been a guest speaker at Commercial Directing Bootcamp. Learn more at commercialdirectingbootcamp.com. He says a similar thing, that I'm selling solutions. I'm a resource. And if I don't have the company or director, I would like to be a resource to lead you to someone else, even if he's not going to make money on it,
mm-hmm.
because in the long term, that's going to pay off. I personally have said to people, oh, wow, I love that you're coming to me. Yes, I can do that. I've done it twice. My friend's done it seven times. I think he would be a better choice.
Right, right.
And that's a painful thing to do.
Yeah.
And maybe that's different from what you're saying, but I want to be a solution. I don't want to talk about how I can service that. Doug's saying, rather than focus on the immediate sale, he wants a long-term leadership. He wants to be the leader in solutions.
Yeah, he's building a relationship.
A relationship,
yeah.
But absolutely. Also the reliability.
Mm-hmm. Right? Trustworthiness.
Trustworthiness, that's a good one.
Absolutely. No, I think that's part of it.
I off a little bit from what you were saying?
No, I think that's the starting point, honestly. I think if you go a step further, there's this thing called, we're going to do a project for you, client. And the client starts to say things like, okay, great, we're going to need a proposal. And you write up your proposal. But why did you do that? Why didn't you tell them, no, we're not in the proposal writing business? Wait, what? No, client, here, we're here to help you because we're the experts. Let me tell you how it's going to go.
Whoa. That's pretty ballsy.
It is ballsy. But guess what? The world loves people who are ready to step up and take charge, right? So the better clients out there are the ones that are like, no, I want an expert. I want somebody to lead me. Okay, there's someone that is willing to take charge and guide me through this process. And guess what? I'll pay a premium for that. And I'm not going to beat them up over rates and rate cards and prices and hours and lines, right, on a bid form, because they gave me this proposal called, for $50,000, we're going to solve your problem and it's going to be freaking awesome. Are you in? That's a different conversation than, well, here's our proposal with our breakdown and our hours. And then they start saying, well, why is this $150 an hour? And do we really need 10 days of what's a gaffer anyways?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's not the game you want to be in.
But sometimes that game is, especially at the level that I'm playing at, with a cost consultant, with a large agency, with a automobile manufacturer.
Oh, yeah.
They do say, in fact, I was so pissed off, I don't know if I've ever shared this one, but it was, the cost consultant wants to know, why does Jordan need two cameras?
Oh, my.
And my answer was, I'm going to over-deliver for the creatives who sit in an editing room.
Yeah.
And we have a kid, I think it was, and that, like, now I'm explaining a filmmaking that I've learned over years, that they're going to want to use one take, and now they're going to have two angles that can cut it into the 30-second commercial.
Sure.
But I'm digressing with emotions. The point, Joel, is that exists, and in that game, you will lose the job if you go, no, here's our number.
Yes.
There's no treatment. There's no bid. Don't ask me why. Now, there is and that's a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
But there is this level that a lot of us play in where it's, you either want what we do or you don't.
Yes.
And to bring it down to a micro example, numerous times on set, I have had a client say to me, like, are you happy? Are we getting good stuff? And they're waiting for me to say yes. As the director, like, I go, oh, I'm so happy right now. And they have this relief, like, oh, good.
Yeah.
Because I don't know comedy. I don't know filmmaking or whatever your wheelhouse is. And we hired you for you to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where you want to be, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, so don't mishear me. There are absolutely like rules and, you know, specifics of the way jobs get bid and get awarded, especially in advertising.
Yeah.
Okay. Totally get that. And I have a lot of clients that are, you know, that in that what I call the AICP world.
Right.
That deal with the cost consultants and all that. But I will say,
Association of Commercial Independent Producers.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I think you messed up the order.
Hey, ICP. Okay. Oh.
Association of Independent Commercial Producers.
Sounds better.
But yeah, that's a great association. There's a ton of best practices and industry standards that they've created that you guys get to benefit from. But there's also this dark side call. We deal with cost consultants and every line is scrutinized. Why do you need the second camera? But there is a conversation called, guys, because you want the spot to be awesome.
Right.
And if you need me to explain it to you, you're clearly not educated. You're not savvy. Like there's a, that again, I would never say that. That's not a diplomatic way of making that point.
No, but we're speaking to our tribe right now.
Yeah, exactly.
No, hey, I had an email conversation this morning where it was, I know we're not going to win. We're not going to be the lowest price.
Mm, yeah.
We're not going to be the lowest price.
No, I love that conversation.
And you know what we did last time. You know how we elevated the work. And if that's not in the cards, cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to help you. I can tell you what we learned. You know, I'm happy to share.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're already adding value just by being involved.
Well, I have this really challenging question, you know, for everyone listening. Okay. Think about this. Let's put it this way. In every market around the country, there's a most expensive shop. Okay. Why shouldn't that be you? So if you're the production company in Seattle and you're like, oh yeah, but you know, there's those guys down the street, they're really great, and those guys are really great. And I'm like, well, why don't you just raise your prices and charge like you're the best? Because then what does that force you to do?
Be the best.
Be the best. And it's weird how people have this price sensitivity freak out thing of like, oh, I'm not sure, I lack confidence. I'm telling you, creatives, and especially the creative entrepreneur, if I throw down a gauntlet to you called, hey, the client says they have $50,000, but I want you to go pitch them on a $100,000 idea that you know is absolutely worth $200,000 because of the result it's going to generate, they get really fired up. They get really excited, and their mind shift changes from scarcity to abundance. And they go to that client and they go, look, I know your budget's $50,000, but I got something I got to run past you because I'm just telling you this is going to blow your socks off. And all of a sudden, there's this conversation happening that I call upselling.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this game, right? One of my guys in Jumpstart, biggest project he'd ever done was $25,000 at his production company. Taught him how to like reposition his firm, engage in this kind of conversation to talk to clients directly. So this is like a brand direct type thing. And he was all excited because he came back to the group and said, hey, everyone, this client has a $60,000 project for us. And we were like, great. Why is it only 60? And he was like, yeah, you're right. He goes back and has this another conversation and comes back and says, we got 90.
Wow.
We just did a $90,000 spot. The work was beautiful. Like we all saw it and just fell over ourselves.
It's like $1 million.
It looked like $1 million. It had drones and everything, right? Of course it did. And it was awesome. But imagine a guy that the largest job he's ever done is $25,000. And then, hey, apply this concept.
Sure, it's almost four times as much.
Go through these shifts in your mindset and everything. Understand the sales game and sold through a $90,000 job.
I think that's what the creative entrepreneur is really investing in when they call you up,
mm-hmm.
is a mind shift and like a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I am not a life coach. I'm an assistant life coach. I have the whistle and those polyester pants.
You got the outfit.
They're getting a mentor in you and your partner,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting confidence and proven examples of this can work.
Yep.
Now back to my fictitious shop in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they grow? If there was one thing they have to start doing to grow, is it just a mindset that they're worth more?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say more than anything, it is adopting a mindset that's different than the mindset that you started your business with. It is adopting a new mindset.
And what about client direct?
Because
I love that space.
It's fun.
It's fun. It has headaches.
Yes, it does.
I found myself on the couple that I did last year taking on roles that normally I would be able to hand off to someone.
That's common.
And that was cool. Mm-hmm. That was cool. It was like kind of uncomfortably fun and like more project managing, mm-hmm. after the job when I couldn't just wash my hands of it and go away.
Yeah, client direct, brand direct, whatever you want to call it, I think is really the future in terms of where the biggest opportunities are in the years ahead. But you do have to be willing to sort of look at the engagement almost from an agency POV.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the way you're engaging with a client, they are uneducated. They're like, we don't know how to do this commercial thing, right? We don't know how to make a documentary. All they know is, well, my son has a 5D and he does some amazing stuff. Could we maybe create this for our product launch? So you have to be able to engage in a way where you almost have somebody that's like an account director.
Right.
Right. You're now copywriting. You now might have someone called an art director figuring out the look of this whole thing. I mean, it kind of goes on and on. So you do have to be willing to understand the problem you're solving is bigger. And so you have to approach those projects saying, well, how are you going to pay for all this? Because that's really where people get into trouble is they think, I'm just going to go make this amazing little documentary for this brand. And then by the time they're done, they're like, oh my gosh, I lost my shirt on that deal. I did this $30,000 documentary that I thought was going to be amazing. And by the time I got done, I spent so much time educating them, bringing right. in extra resources to help get these things sure. done.
Hiring an
art director. Yeah, I spent $50,000 and oh my God, what just happened? But for the, you know, the other opportunity I love about that space is there are a lot of big brands that don't have cost consultants yet. They don't have a big AOR agency, right? This is all brand new to them. All they know is we need content.
And are they open to someone just cold calling or it's like, I guess the magic formula is that relationship to get in the door, to show them and to tell them like, yes, I'm a leader. Yes, I have an idea for them. I researched their content that they've been putting out. I have a better approach to doing it. Getting in the door. Do you advise people on that? Or?
Yes. Yeah, all the time. Because I loved it, right? So back when I ran Impossible Pictures, we did a lot of direct-to-brand stuff. Like for Dish Network, that was one of our big clients.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that was the type of engagement. So, and I also loved it. I thought it was just fun stuff. There was a lot of opportunity there because you could sell a big round number called, we're going to create your spot. And there was not a lot of arguing and negotiating. It was sort of like, okay, great. You guys got it. Go do your thing. But to answer your question, how do you get in that door? You know, how do you get that meeting? It really does come down to the positioning. Because if you're positioned as, we're a video production company, they're not going to get it.
Right.
You have to be a solutions company, an innovations company, a communications company. I don't know what it is, okay? But it's that spicy, sticky thing that creates curiosity where somebody goes, I don't really understand what these guys do, but we need to talk to them because what they've got going on, I think might be the answer to what we need. So great marketing creates curiosity. It doesn't answer questions. Does that make sense?
Let me just process that. Marketing creates curiosity, which is a good thing.
Yes. So if your website is answering questions, it's failing.
I read this in the group.
Oh, did you?
In the seven essential ingredients.
Yeah.
By the way, I thought cumin would have been one of the ingredients.
Well, you know, of course.
That's like number nine.
Right. But no, I like to say that that great marketing, it's not answering questions. It's creating curiosity, which leads to conversation. That's my three C's. Creating three curiosity, C's. Which leads to conversation.
Curiosity, conversation, and what was the other one?
Create. Create curiosity, which leads to conversations.
Those are the three C's.
Mm-hmm.
I like the three C's.
Well, that's just my way. I remember this stuff.
We both use the three R's.
Yeah, yeah.
But you changed one. I put it on the group.
Oh, I did?
I say real. You do a job for the real, the relationship, or the revenue.
Oh.
You say real.
Relationship
reward. Or reward.
Yeah.
Which is a fancy word for revenue. Because maybe it's not revenue. Maybe it's accolades.
Maybe. It can also be riches.
Riches is good.
Remuneration. I have explored these R's a lot. No, the basic idea is you in order to move forward as a firm, you have to start getting picky and selective.
What are the three P's though? I saw one with P's, a Venn diagram.
That's positioning.
Positioning.
Three
tell us
P's
about that.
Of positioning.
By the way, we got about 10 minutes.
Okay, cool.
And I want to cover whatever, but tell us about the P's and then we'll hit whatever you want to hit.
You got it. So three P's are when it comes time to position your firm and figure out how are we going to communicate our brand to the world, what we're about. you talk about, you get in touch with your purpose, your power, and your personality.
Your purpose, your power, I get that one, and your personality.
And there's a big personality sitting across the room from me here, right? So this is again, something that you have that's very powerful. But
purpose, what about purpose? What
does purpose is like, why do you exist? What is it you're trying to accomplish? What's your mission in the world, right? Do you want to make people laugh? You want to make people smile? Great. There's your purpose.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. But you look at the intersection of those three things, and then you wrap that around your name. Okay. So if your firm is, Kitty Cat Productions or whatever, well, you're going to come up with language around your purpose, your power, and your personality that is all feline, because that's your POV, right? Again, I don't know.
Should a new company, let's say I'm going to start a new venture. Mm-hmm. Would I be wise to think of my three P's, purpose, personality, and powers? Can you mix them up like that? You can mix them up?
Yeah.
The three P's?
Yeah, yeah.
And then think of a name?
Yes.
That might be smarter.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because a lot of times people go through this exercise and they say, oh, crap, my name doesn't really match. So then they have this problem of how do I, square peg, round hole kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But no, I went through this exercise with one of my clients. Do you know the guys at Laundry?
Of course. PJ was on the show.
He was on the show, right? Yeah.
I want to say you might have introduced me to PJ.
I think so.
PJ's great. Their work is,
I know, it's awesome.
Really top-notch design and animation. His Instagram is great.
Yeah, he's a killer guy. And Laundry, of course, is doing amazing work.
Sneakerhead.
Yeah. So I worked with the guys at Laundry because about a year ago, we realized, hey, there's an opportunity. Let's reposition. Let's fine-tune this positioning. And where we landed, I won't tell the whole story, but where we landed was this artists, misfits, wild cards, experts of the unexpected. Okay?
Experts of the unexpected. And they did a Simpsons campaign for the whatever anniversary that was exactly that.
Exactly.
It was unexpected. And they're... You tell me, but I bet they got the assignment because Fox, I guess, would have hired them, right? Or Gracie, who...
I think it was FX.
Oh, FX. Yeah. Okay. Because they wanted someone to put a spin on the traditional Simpsons.
Well, what's interesting is this tuned-up positioning was after that project. And it was one of those projects that made us realize, wait a minute, this is who we are. This is what Laundry is all about. So the short version is I was just visiting with PJ yesterday, and what was so exciting to hear from his point of view was having a really clear positioning, message, anthem, rallying cry, if you will, has given them so much power to reach out and connect with people in a way to stick in people's minds, to get that meeting. And it's just because they finally got clear about who are we? What do we believe? What do we stand for? What are we here to do? Because I can tell you, that first introduction, that first meeting, it's not about the work yet. They're almost like you build this trust first before you start talking about expertise, right? And when people say, wow, there's this famous Simon Sinek quote from Start With Why guy, where he says, your job is not to do business with people who need what you have. It's to do business with people who believe what you believe. And see, once you connect with somebody who believes what you believe, like, yeah, I want to make people laugh, I want to make the world smile, you're my guy. Like, you connect on a level called, we just need to do business, we just need to work together,
let's find a project.
Yeah. And then when I look at your portfolio, I go, oh yeah, well, the portfolio just backs up everything I've heard about you.
Suggest people have a meeting, like a general meeting with people first?
Yeah, sure.
But it's harder and harder with people's schedules these days.
Yes. I think you have to be pretty intentional. There's sort of a sequence of this sales cycle of how you move people from unaware to aware.
And you guide people through that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, now Joel, this has been a fabulous conversation.
I agree, it's been fun.
What are some topics that you want to do? Because you came in with, I don't know if those notes were for the show.
Oh, no, they weren't.
Okay, good, because we didn't even look at your notes.
That's right.
What are some topics that you wanted to hit or speak directly to the listeners?
Oh, I think we've covered a lot of them. You know, I think something I would just wanted to encourage people to do is to check out 7 Ingredients, right? That Facebook group. So if you go to, it's the number 7 Ingredients, search for that, because if you're qualified, if you're an owner of a studio or a production company, we welcome you there.
And I'm so happy it's curated.
Yeah.
That you
what has to be
weed out the riffer. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of stuff.
Right. And you probably saw PJ in there, right?
I did see PJ.
Yeah. So that's really cool. So I want to invite people to that. Also RevThink, our creative entrepreneurs events. I want people to go to revthink.com and look at our blog, because there's articles about the 3 P's. There's articles about, sales, about finance, all these 7 ingredients and things. And then I would also encourage people to check out Jumpstart, which is this accelerator that I have. It's like a 10-week intensive where I take owners of smallish, I'll call it $500,000 to $1.5 million size firms. And in 10 weeks, I just overwhelm them with marketing and positioning and sales and negotiating and all these things to help them, reach that next level.
Would it be good if the owner of a shop that you have described take the accelerator course with one of their partners?
Yes.
So they have a context to talk to each other about what they've learned and to apply it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a producer and a director that went out on their own, that teamed up to do it, to do their business. Mm-hmm. They should take it together.
Yeah, because if you're an owner and you may have 2 or 3 or 4 partners, I encourage those firms that go through the accelerator, like, get all of your owners. Like, I get there may just be one person that's really doing the course, right? But I want the other partners there and participating, because I know how it is. I'm going to give you all these ideas about, sales or something, and then you're going to walk away and be like, I need my partner to watch this, because over dinner tonight, we have got to figure this out.
And are they live on the web?
They are. So
live seminars.
Yeah. So every week I deliver what I call a module, which is me going through topic 1 through 10 on all these areas.
Right. So you sent me an example that I watched.
Oh, I did?
Really enjoyed it. Yeah, you're engaging. You're
awesome. Oh, thank you.
Handsome. articulate, clear, to the point.
Well, now you're just kissing up. But I do a module once a week, and then each week I also do a live Q&A. So this is where all the members, all the people that are in the accelerator, we get on a live Q&A, and everybody just takes turns, raises their hand, and it's... It may be related to the accelerator, like the module, the topic, or it might be like, I'm trying to hire this dude and I don't know how to negotiate, this employment contract. I mean, whatever the issue is, we'll hit it. And then we have our own private Facebook group, surprise, surprise, for people in the accelerator. So there's the 30 people going through it that are all in there together. And trust me, that's been the biggest surprise, is the tribe there, because those people are all kind of getting their minds blown at the same time,
right?
But they're also in these are from at last count 18 different countries in there, the people. So you're getting a wide perspective of people, someone in Italy saying, hey, here's my latest pitch deck that I'm going into this meeting with, what do you think? Okay. And then there's somebody from Iceland saying, here in Iceland we have this policy, there's a law against cold email, how do I deal with that, right? So we're just... And this is 24/7. So people are in this group and they're just, they're just throwing questions, ideas, what have you out there.
And that is somewhat self-fulfilling. Like people, you don't have to curate, I'm sure, the membership limited to the people in the accelerator program.
Right.
But they're answering each other's questions.
Yeah. And people have connected and collaborated. You're a live action production company. We're motion design. We're sound design. Let's get together on this project, which I'm like, whoa, that's awesome. How cool is that? So yeah, but that I don't control that. This is a group of people. It's like people in a class. If the people in the class want to get together and talk about, what's going on, that's what the class is there for, to support that and encourage it.
What a great testament to this legacy that you're building.
I hope so.
That people are, doesn't it feel good?
It feels really good. Yeah. It feels really good.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's very satisfying for me. RevThinking is produced by RevThink. Feel free to connect with us at revthink.com. We'd love to help. And hey, if you like the RevThinking podcast, please do us a favor by subscribing on iTunes and giving us your feedback.
Thanks for listening to RevThinking.
I want to tell you about a place to connect that you might not know about. It's our online community called Rev Community. It's a great place to get to know other creative business owners like yourself, to share some thought leadership and read other encouragement, to be challenged in this new marketplace, new technology, ideas, economic trends. And it's a place to research. Check out many of the resources we have online, our videos, and of course, this podcast. Join us today at revthink.com/community. If you're a creative studio owner, feel free to join us today at revthink.com/community. I look forward to seeing you there.